this magic night, a million stars will play beside us, cast a spell of light, glimmering, shimmering, carouseling round the world tonight, a symphony in spectral magic, pure enchantment.
Welcome to the WDW Park Hoppers Table for Four, and I am very excited because I have a bunch of new friends that I've just met. My name is Park Hopper John. I come to you from WDW Park Hoppers. You also might know me from the Disney Parks podcast I record with Tony Castelnova, so hopefully you know me from there. And what I'd like to do really quick, guys, if we could, is to go around and introduce ourselves. So we'll do ladies first, and Mrs. Plantoons, we'll start with you.
All right. I am Mrs. Plantoons. I record with my husband. We do a vlog and a blog. You can find us at www.plantoons.com or youtube.com/WDWPlantoons or on iTunes, WDWPlantoons. All of those.
Excellent. And let's go with Josh Taylor. Why don't you introduce yourself, tell everybody a little bit about you and where you come from.
My name's Josh. I was born in Denver, Colorado. How much do you want to know? I can keep going through the whole chronological thing.
Well, don't start. I was born.
I was born a small black child. My name is Josh. I run Modern Mouse Radio. We're a full multimedia company where we do videos and audio and etc. But with the name, the podcast is where we kind of hang our hat at the end of the day. With Modern Mouse Radio, we kind of cover a lot of spectrums of things, but I like to look at things in a social manner or a political manner or anything. So, for example, next week's show, we're talking about Song of the South and racism. Previously, we've talked about Disney princesses and if they're good role models for females and for small children.
Wow.
We talked about Epcot's real community of tomorrow that Walt wanted to build and the things that came from that that are now in the real world and how we use things like monorails in large cities now to get around. We try and focus in on that, but we also have a lot of fun. We do top tens. We do games and things like that, but I really like to now focus more on social issues tied to Disney.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel guilty because we talk about fun stuff and we don't really get that deep into it, man. That's deep. I dig that. That's a great idea. That's a great spin on bringing the Disney community into the real world. That's awesome. That's great. Looking forward to the talk tonight. And last but certainly not least, Michael from Weeby Geeks. Good friend of our friend.
Don't go away.
Almost gotcha. good friend Kristen Aljon. We had them on last week, and so I'm very excited to have you on the show. So, Mike, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Well, for the sake of this particular show, I run a show called Mighty Marvel Geeks. We talk all things Marvel, be it Marvel Comics, Marvel TV, Marvel movies, be it Marvel Studios, Fox, Sony licensed. If it's Marvel, it's Marvel. Part of the show, we'll do a recap of the latest episode or episodes of either Agent Carter or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when they're out. We might later delve into maybe some brief recaps of the animated series on Disney XD, which there are now four. You got Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers Assemble, which is now going to be Ultron related, Ultimate Spider-Man, which is going to be Sinister Six related, and Hulk Agents of Smash. We also do our picks of the week for the upcoming New Comic Book Day, which for those who don't know, New Comic Book Day is every Wednesday. So as we're recording tonight, today is New Comic Book Day. So last week's show had our picks for this week. There's three of us on the show. There's Eric Allen, Kylan Tolles, and myself. So if all three of us are together, that's 9 picks. We also delve into the world of Marvel Unlimited, which is the Marvel comic app that has a subscription base that gives you access to over 15,000 titles. And we do our pick of the week, and our first pick of the week from that is also our book of the month, in which at the end of the month we do a book club. So we encourage everyone to get Marvel Unlimited, read the book, unless you already have a hard copy of the book or a digital copy. Read the book, send us your comments or opinions on that book, and we'll incorporate it into the book of the month. You can find Mighty Marvel Geeks. We air every Saturday night first on Sorcerer Radio, and then we release at 6:16 in the morning or 6:16 in the evening on Sundays as a podcast, which you commonly will find the Book of the Month. Rarely you'll get the Book of the Month on Sorcerer Radio because of time. And when we release on podcast, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, I think TuneIn, anywhere you could. Most podcasters out there were there, or you go to the site weebiegeeks.net, which is also the home of my main show, in which we talk everything geek, movies, television, games, whatever. And of course, we tout ourselves over on that show as the official voice of the geek revolution. Which, right, at the moment, I have very little voice.
Yeah. So. Yeah. You're a trooper, man. Staying up late, being sick, I appreciate it very much.
I'm used to it. I work in entertainment, so
right,
the late hours is no big deal.
And you also have, what would you say, like 18-year history with Walt Disney World, so you, yeah, are also steeped in the Disney as well.
Yeah. Just recently hit 18 years. I guess we'll do a Deadpool type thing and break that fourth wall. I'm a Disney cast member as well. So I'm an entertainment cast member on the technician side, nice, primarily at Epcot. So
nice. Well, from all the Disney fans, at least from my house, because my wife and I are both, we come from the technical background, like the AV side of life. So thank you for what you guys and your team do. Without you guys, there wouldn't be all the fun stuff that we get to do. So, thank you.
No problem.
All right. So, thank you guys for being here, and I appreciate you guys taking time out. So, let's just kind of start. Let's start off with something relatively easy. We can all kind of ease into it. And Disney made an announcement earlier this week that one of the most beloved shows is going away. So, the Dream Along with Mickey show, after a 10-year run, is going away, and we're bringing in a new Mickey and Friends Fair thing. We're doing away with the traditional princesses that we've had for a long time. We're bringing in a new group of princesses and telling all new stories. What was you guys' reaction when you saw that? What do you guys think when Disney dropped that little nugget?
I'll be honest, I love both Disneyland and Disney World, but I'm a Disneylander at heart. At Disneyland, you can walk right through the castle any time of day, and yes, they do have sporadic shows in front of the castle. The marching band plays there. You have Mary Poppins, ooh, and Bert come out and do a little dance, things like that. But for Walt Disney World, there's a point in time where I just kind of wish sometimes that they would do away with the castle shows in general, and I know a lot of people love them, but the idea of being able to walk through that castle at any time is kind of that magical moment that we all saw on television as children, so to have this big blockade around the castle in general, I do like the show. I liked the show. My wife would well up when she would watch that show. Even on the YouTube video version of it, she would well up when she watched it. But there's something magical about just being able to walk through the castle at any time of day. So I'm not necessarily loving either way. If they said, hey, we're going to do away with the castle show, great. If they said we're going to keep the old show, great, whatever. But, for me, nostalgia is would like me to go through those gates uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. That's just me, though.
I understand. I get that. My mom, that was the first show that she really connected with. I'm not sure she knows yet. I haven't heard screaming and wailing from Ohio. But I'm sure it's coming. What were your thoughts, Anita? Excuse me, Mrs. Plant. Can I call you Anita? Or do I have to say
you
Ms.
Can
Plant?
Call, no, Plant, you can call me. You can call me whatever you want.
Okay.
I have two daughters. The first one, when we took her to Disney World, she was going to be 4 years old, and we were walking past towards the left-hand side, and as we were walking past, I saw the princesses up on stage. I ran like nobody's business, and I don't run to get her to get in front of there to see those princesses. And she, like, melted. She was all excited. It was fantastic. The moment was there. I have a second daughter who could care less about what princess it is as long as it's a strong one. So having Tiana up there is big. She loves Rapunzel, so she's of that. When the new movies started coming out, those are her classics. So, you know, I don't mind as long as there's somewhere in the park. It doesn't even have to be at the castle. Because I think having the castle be the place for the fireworks and the grand spectacular show at the end of the night is, you know, and the beginning of the opening of the park is fantastic. They don't need to have anything on there, but they have to have that show somewhere. So that you have access to all of the princesses doing something incredible. So, and I really don't mind as long as it, you know, that kind of show continues with all the characters together.
But wouldn't it be, I mean, that's one of the reasons why they built the entire princess building in Fantasyland, right? Was to be able to access any and all princesses there. They kind of have their place. I'm not saying that it's bad that they're front and center in front of the castle. I'm just stating that if you want to see the princesses, they are there.
Seeing them and having them perform for you are two different things. When you go and see them, they're snobby. They've got a rehearsed script that everyone can see through. And, like, the kids are looking at them like, yeah, this is ridiculous. Like, if they just took a picture with a cutout, it'd almost be better. The only ones that they really connect with that way are Minnie and Mickey, where they don't see an actual person. Because the person, other than if they're entertaining them, they don't connect with it at all. Mm-hmm. Cinderella was probably the nicest of the greetings, and thank goodness, because it cost you a half a kidney to get in to see her. But, I'd rather go for the entertainment with the princesses than the actual, like, get a fast pass and go stand in line to see them in a place.
Well, the whole function of that show, it doesn't matter what they would put there. The whole function of that show is not necessarily to entertain or bring princesses out. It's to pull people from the lands. The lands get full at different parts of the day, and so they built the whole stage and put a show there so that they could draw people out of the lands and then redistribute people as the day goes on. So, you know, There probably will never be a time, unfortunately, and it does break my heart, because I love the idea of being able to walk to that castle all day, but I don't think there's going to be a time when they take that stage away. It's too integral to how that park works.
Yeah, it's cue control.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Sorry to break into this, but one of the things at Disneyland that they've done is being able, and they do that partially at Disney World as well. They have, like, you know, the trolley car singers come down the street and jump out and do that. I don't understand why, and maybe this is a Disney World thing versus a Disneyland thing, and maybe you can jump in on this for having worked at Disney World for so long. But for Disneyland, the majority of the things that happen seem much more spontaneous. You know, for example, you could have the marching band anywhere in any of the lands at any given time playing. You know, you have trolley streetcar singers. You have different entertainments here and there throughout the park. At Disney World, everything is much more on a timed schedule. You know, at 8 a.m. this happens. Then at 9 a.m. this happens, and so on. And I think there is a way to take away the stage show completely, but still have exciting moments happen in the hub, you know, still being able to have little tiny shows happen. At Disneyland, you have, you know, five or six musicians come out with Bert and Mary Poppins, and they dance, you know, and, with children in front of the castle, or they go over to what would be Casey's Corner at Walt Disney World at the Magic Kingdom, and they go over to the ragtime player, and they play musical chairs with kids. You know, there's different entertainment ideas to bring a crowd away from other lands or busier areas during the day, because they Disney does the research. They know what lands are the busiest during what time of day or whenever, according to every, you know, wait times, etc. They could pull people easily into different things. Like, okay, at 4 p.m., Pirates of the Caribbean is the longest line it ever is. Great, that's when you have the little Jack Sparrow stage show. You know, that's when you have those little tiny things that make the day seem less planned. And that's the more magical feeling I love from Disney, regardless of where you're at the parks or whatever. I love that spontaneity that they usually, at Disneyland, put into stage shows or whatever, entertainment outside of the rides. And Walt Disney World just doesn't seem to do that as often. And I kind of miss that over at that park because they used to. They used to do that at Walt Disney World more often.
Be honest with you, I'm not sure how management or those who control how and what shows get put where, how the timing works. Magic Kingdom, the only thing I ever did over there, truly, besides being involved in the Tinkerbell flight at the end of the night, was the program that has now been renamed Disney Performing Arts, but the old Magic Music Days. I was involved there. And of course, we had to coordinate, you know, we had set show times for that too. So we pretty much knew coming in each year, these are our potential show times throughout the day. It is, what are they? And we knew they weren't going to vary because that's what was our scheduled window with everything else going around, be it, I can't remember the name of the band that was in Tomorrowland. Tomorrowland Blast?
Sure.
I don't remember.
Sure.
We'll go with that.
The one at Cosmic Rays?
Yeah, no, not the one
that
Cosmic.
Came out.
The one that came out over by Carousel of Progress. And they performed in front of the old Tomorrowland stage when that was there, which is now where the dance party is.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so. So, yeah, it's spontaneity. Now it's more, like you said, yeah, we are more structured. But apparently that's what works for us here in Florida with the tourists, especially since we get a lot of the Europeans, and the Europeans want set, you know,
they want to be able to plan everything ahead of time.
Yeah.
I sort of agree, but I don't necessarily think that, because I think the idea, yeah, maybe in Magic Kingdom, but like over in Epcot, you know, in every World Showcase Pavilion, there are performers. There are street performers.
Yes.
And yes, they are on the Times Guide, but more or less, people who stop to watch those people are people that happen to come upon them.
Agreed.
And there's something much more interesting in that aspect of it. The dance parties at Tomorrowland or wherever, and they don't work.
No.
Every time I've been there, there's 10 people there. There are 4 kids. They look uncomfortable being there. All right? The idea of having a street performer come out, the Jammeters at Epcot, they seem spontaneous. Even though it's scheduled, even though it's on the Times Guide, it seems spontaneous. And again, the majority of people connecting with the Jammeters tend to be people who come upon them. And I think that could work at Magic Kingdom. And maybe there are some people who would like to schedule things in and out, but having an elaborate stage show, or like Fireworks Mike, like, there has to be a technical side to stuff like that. You know, you have to be there to make sure that Tinkerbell doesn't fall off the castle, because that would be scary. But to have a couple of musicians come out and play, you know, let's just say we're in Adventureland, they come out and play some Dixieland jazz for 30 minutes, people are going to watch it. You know, there's a possibility there. And I'm not saying that the stage show is good or bad. I'm just saying that there are possibilities to have more spontaneity or seem like spontaneity, even though it's scheduled on Disney's side, than not.
Well, like the pirate show that's over at Magic Kingdom.
Right.
The way that comes about, the way that show starts, it's supposed to be a spontaneous type opening.
And it's one of the better shows at Magic Kingdom, I think.
And it's, but like the old Woody's Roundup, you knew that was coming because you see everyone cordon off, you know, start putting down tape for where they needed to keep the area clear for whatever was coming out involved with that show.
Yeah.
So some of the spontaneity is not there with that, but I mean, it just depends on, I guess it depends on the stage, the land, the...
I think it depends a lot on the park, because if you're at Hollywood Studios, you've got the, you know, the Hollywood people driving up and down, and they're in character the whole time. Yeah. You could be riding the Tower of Terror, and then there's someone standing there, and you can't tell whether they're a statue or not. And then, you know, there's Marilyn Monroe on the side, and there's, you know, there's constantly people just coming up around that main street, coming up and down. Right. At Epcot, not as much, but they do have the high school choruses playing. They do have, like, little areas that you can go into that are a little quieter where, you know, where the inventions are, and you can go and see the house burn down and stuff like that.
Which is gone, actually.
Yeah, it's just, it's gone? It's gone. Thank goodness. It scared the heck out of my son. Like, he thought our house was burning down for a year.
Yeah, there's some revamping going on.
Oh my gosh. West, yeah. I've never seen him shake like that. And my other two daughters were like, this was lame. And he's like, oh my god, we're going to die. It was really terrible. But yeah, well, there's little things like that. And the Dapper Dan still sing.
Yeah. And they're up on Main Street. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, well, there's that kind of stuff that's good.
In Fantasyland, you've got Sword and Stone, which mm-hmm. you know, that just seems like it's a spontaneous thing. Hey, we need someone to help come prove that they're worthy.
Okay.
Type deal. You know, you try and pull Excalibur out of the stone.
I'm going to do it next time. I am.
I don't control it.
Uh-huh.
Only if you're a kid.
But they also do another thing where it's like royalty.
Uh-huh.
Where it's another group where they pick kids out to become royalty type deal. And that's a, even though it's a time show, it
it's
comes
like
out.
It's like a Jedi training?
Sort of, yeah.
Where there's something except, necessarily sign up, but it's in that spot.
Well, Jedi Training Academy, you do sign up for now.
Right.
There is the fast pass for it. Right. With the
there's a fast pass for it. Write that down.
With the one over in Magic Kingdom. Uh-huh. I don't remember if it's princess something for princesses or what. Because I'm not over there, you know, and my time over there is kind of limited. But that's a cast member issue and that, mm-hmm. that you talked about. That almost comes off as a spontaneity type thing as well. And they might do it like a couple times during the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the maybe Princess Training Academy or Royalty Training Academy, something like that. I don't remember. So that seems like it comes off spontaneity. But your stage shows, you know, the castle, obviously it's planned.
Right.
And it's done to kind of help, again, alleviate some stress on the lands.
Well, I mean, everybody plans their vacation like 180 days ahead of time. What parks they're going to be in, they can go on an app and get all their fast passes ahead of time. So they know exactly what they're doing. And they know, like, I mean, we've done shows where we're like, all right, you're going to go to a dessert party in this kingdom and you're going to have to ride this transportation to get there. And you're planning out how many minutes between parks. So if you're doing all that, having it not as spontaneous is fine as long as, like, on your way to the things that you've scheduled, there's something going on.
Right.
You see the characters out and interacting with people.
And that's a good point, because now that Walt Disney World is really completely married to the whole Magic Band idea, and those spontaneous moments are happening.
The fun shackles.
But at the same time, we have
the
all
failed project.
What is that going to do, Josh? What's that going to do to Disneyland? Because that's coming.
No, it's not.
It's coming your way.
No, it's not.
It's not. It's
not.
It's not. No.
Magic Bands will not be happening at Disneyland. No,
yeah. Really?
Essentially, it's a failed project.
One of the things. Sorry, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I won't tell you how much money has been spent into it. How many? We'll go Epcot, for instance. Pooh and Tigger was supposed to be in April, originally September 13, then April 14. It was originally supposed to be a fast pass only meet and greet.
Wow.
Yeah.
They had the computer there. They got the sensor there. Everything's there for it.
Hmm.
But it got dropped.
Never activated. I think they did a test for a week or two with it, where they actually had an ops person there to run the computer, but yeah, kind of see if things were working. But it never came through. It never got activated.
Hmm.
The whole Magic Band. In many ways, it's still being forced because of the amount of money spent. So now to make it a Walt Disney World only exclusive thing, you will not find it. You will not find it in Paris. You will not find it at Shanghai. You will not find it at Hong Kong. You will not find it in California. It's now kind of an exclusive thing for us. But yeah, California, because of all the problems and everything that they had getting it active, getting it launched, getting everything switched over to it, it's not going to California. We were the test. Essentially, the test failed. They're doing everything to try and get their money's worth back from it, and I'm sure they're working on the next thing. So,
what I've been hearing, the rumblings from the Disneyland side of things, is that the kiosks at the Walt Disney World Park, so instead of having to go to Pirates to get a Pirates pass or to go to Space Mountain to get a Space Mountain pass, there will be something like that probably where you'll be able to go to anywhere in the park and be able to get a paper fast pass.
At a kiosk.
Yeah. That will be the extent, really. You might be able to schedule some things in advance, but the whole culture around Disneyland isn't go, 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 go. The idea around Disneyland for a lot of people that are locals is that it's a social scene. There are a lot of people that go to have dinner and then leave. Because it's such a locals park, there are people that go, they ride two rides, they meet up with friends, they take pictures with characters, and then they spend 3 hours just kind of walking around Main Street, you know? The idea in Southern California is way more laid back. So I just don't feel like the majority of park goers in California want to make sure that they get their top three, you know, fast passes in by 10 a.m., because truthfully, they don't care, which is kind of nice. I mean, you don't have, yes, you have long lines sometimes at Disneyland, but there are many times throughout the day where it's a 5-minute wait for Space Mountain.
Right. Well, the difference is, too, between Disneyland and Disney World, the way it was explained to me back when I went through Traditions, is when people, how you, unofficially, we were talking about this during on a break when I was on Traditions. Someone goes, well, I kind of like working here at Disneyland. The person goes, no. You're at Walt Disney World. Remember that. Right. And how you remember that is everyone in the land, in the U.S., in the country goes to the land. The world, or the country goes to California. The land goes to California. The world comes to Florida. And that's how you know. And that was the explanation of Walt Disney World as opposed to Disneyland. The world comes here. That's the easiest way to remember it.
Yeah.
Because, just point blank, the world does come here. I'm sure that there's a lot of international guests out in California as well.
Definitely.
But I can almost guarantee you we get more international guests than California does.
Well, you get more guests in general anyway.
Well, yeah.
Well, I mean, we've been told, this is happening because, well, we're a destination. We're a world destination. Disneyland is a great place, but it's really a locals park. And I hear that all the time, and there's a piece of me in my heart, I know that to be true. I'm not arguing that, so please don't think that I am. But I think the very scenario, Josh, that you were saying happens here all the time on probably a percentage just as big a scale. I don't go to Disney necessarily to ride all the rides and hang out and go like tourists do, because I just want to get in. If I want to ride something, God forbid, maybe I got a fast pass, maybe I just happen to hit it at the right time. But I just think Disney to me is just a social lubricant. I just go hang out with friends.
But you are a local.
Right.
That's the difference is,
I am not a local.
You're not, but
no, and I'm very much with you there. I go, I plan 180 days ahead of time. I know what I want to hit. I know who I want to hit it with. And it's my aunt lives down there, and she wants to hang out with us when we go down, and I love her so, so very much. But unless she wants to ride the rides with us, there's no time. Right. You want to have dinner? Fantastic. But we're going on Everest.
Now, the comparison, you're the best comparison I could probably give you, though, of the four parks here, the one that would be probably considered the local park that the locals are going to go to the most is Epcot.
Yeah.
Fridays and Saturdays, you're going to see a lot of locals.
So much eating.
And that's the big reason right there that John... Oh, no, it's not the eating.
I want to eat.
It's not the eating. Drinking.
Oh, the drinking? Well, yeah.
It's the drinking.
I can't say that out loud, but I would drink everywhere. Oh, my gosh. They have the best of all... Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And the sad part is the drinking is what dominates. No matter how high Disney makes the alcohol and prices the alcohol, people are going to pay it. People will clear out their bank accounts to get plastered. And I see it every weekend. I see it every major holiday. I see it every food and wine.
Well, it's because it's similar to Las Vegas. You feel like, in a way, with Epcot, you can walk around, and you're basically walking the streets. You can wander the park freely with your drink. You can watch a show. There's not very many rides. So the whole point of it is being able to wander. You don't get to experience wandering around with a drink unless you want to get pulled over by a cop.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of the excitement, even for locals, okay, let's go spend 4 hours at Epcot. Let's go to, La Cava del Tequila, get a couple of margaritas. Then we'll, head over to whatever and grab another drink.
But the difference between Epcot and Vegas is Disney's not fond of it. All the drunks, whereas right. Vegas could care less because the more you drink,
right,
the more
you're
going to lose your money.
It's become a problem.
Otherwise. But right. at Disney, it has problem. Become – Disney is a problem. Yeah. I mean, point blank, I see it. I've seen it. I live it. Epcot's the park that I work at. So, I mean, I see it constantly. After 5, 6 o'clock, it's – people are a little more loose with life, so to speak, because they're just plastered.
No. Yeah, now you guys get 90 days of the Flower and Garden Festival. Lucky you guys.
Which is adding some food and wine some food and wine elements into it.
Sure.
Which has grown gradually. I think the food kiosks just started, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, like 3 years ago. There's a few. Now that, and then they were at 11, and I think we're at 13.
It might as well be renamed instead of food flower and garden. Might as well be named food and wine. Food and wine spring.
Right.
I mean, at this point in time.
And you guys are getting Josh. You guys are getting Food and Wine Festival back. It's been gone for a couple of years. Josh disappeared. Oh,
there I am here. Let me be clear. I'm not a local at Disneyland. I'm from Denver. But I'm moving there this year. I've always been fond of the Food and Wine Festival at California Adventure because it's not like Epcot. Like you were saying, after 5 p.m. at Epcot, one in every three people that's an adult is probably inebriated to some degree. California Adventure, definitely because of the hey, we're California, we want to show you California, is more based in maybe beers and wines. And typically, a shot of wine will be 2 ounces, maybe, that you'll get a sample. But the heavy emphasis is on food, similar to, if you go to Flower and Garden or if you go to Food and Wine, now there's, the Florida Fresh kiosk. And that tends to be the entire Food and Wine Festival at Disneyland. There's this California emphasis, or at least it was. I don't know how it'll be now. But there's always been kind of a California Fresh. And California, I think a majority of people would stereotype California, because it's true, is very much farm to table, vegetarian, vegan, healthier lifestyle.
That's where all the farmers are.
Of eating, yeah. So I think
right there.
I think the idea behind Food and Wine there isn't to taste things from around the world, because that's what Epcot brings to the table. Right. The idea is to taste fresh foods that are local, to taste fresh wines that are local, and you can talk to the guy that made that wine. You can talk to the guy that grew, those oranges or whatever. And kind of get more of a sense of farm-to-table feel with your food there.
It would be more like your local city's Food and Wine Festival. I know Orlando's holding theirs. Either they just had it or it's coming up.
Or being able to go to a farmer's market and be able to taste everything for free.
But Epcot has a little bit of that.
What was the paradise thing they used there?
But there's also
what is it?
But it's also labeled. I mean, it's not just Epcot's Food and Wine Festival. It's Epcot's International Food and Wine Festival.
Right.
And yeah, the alcohol served from the various kiosks are little samples, but you're still paying $5-6 for that sample. But you get the samples of the beer. You get samples of the wine. Can you buy the bottles of wine? Yes. Could you potentially buy another, regular beer? I don't remember because it's been a while since I've actually partaken as a guest in Food and Wine. partially because, one, I just don't want to go on my days off at the moment, especially during Food and Wine, because during the Food and Wine time, it's not 5 o'clock that you see it. It's 1 or 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, and World Showcase opens at 11. So, I mean, it just happens that quick because you have, you know, your 11 countries and you have however many kiosks out there. I mean, it grows every year. You know, drinking around the world and during Food and Wine.
It's like a bar crawl.
Oh, yeah, and you're blitzed beforehand, so.
Now, yeah. I've only been there during the spring and the summer. I don't go during the fall because of the school for the kids and all that kind of stuff. But so I've missed out on Food and Wine, mostly upset more because of the food part of it. But now that I'm hearing you guys talk, I kind of want to go to California in the fall to see what they've got going on because that sounds a lot better than what they're doing in Florida.
Well, what they're doing with the Food and Wine kiosk aspect with Flower and Garden is similar to what they're doing in California. And it's, mm-hmm. But it's more, you know, it's that food to table. It's what comes out of your gardens mm-hmm. to the table.
Now, is it what's coming out of Epcot's garden? Or at least the Florida Farmer's Garden so that it doesn't travel?
It tends to be.
But they still, I mean, they might talk about, you know, other stuff. Like in the, I want to say, you know, you'll have the cranberry bog in the front mm-hmm. Type deal. It's just a general garden. You know, they're now incorporating, here's, if you have a garden, here's what you could grow at home and bring to your own table type deal.
Okay.
And incorporating that and doing that type of thing with the mm-hmm. with the food kiosk. And, of course, you do that, you might as well go ahead and throw the alcohol because people are going to get it anyway. So let's go ahead and highlight now more the U.S. geared stuff or what would be local to that particular country.
No, I mean, I can see the pairings and that kind of stuff is fine. But
and that's why a lot of it is pairings.
Nothing's been worse than when they had Pleasure Island. Pleasure Island, to me, was an affront to all things family. Like, you're there with your kids, you're around, and it wasn't that segregated from Downtown Disney.
No. So, well, it depends on when you were there.
Okay. Yeah, it was 99.
99, I think you still had to buy a ticket to get into Pleasure Island.
They had bands when we were there, and it was awful. Now, going from there with the drunks now.
What time of night? But, I mean, were you there after?
We were there probably around 8 o'clock, 9, walking around after dinner, yeah.
And you didn't have to buy a ticket? Because I know that was a hard ticket at that point.
No.
They would let people walk through, but you had to buy a band for the different clubs, except for the comedy club and maybe one of the other ones. You could go to the comedy club as a family.
Right.
That was something that they integrated. But I think you're right, Mike. There was a point when you did have to buy a separate ticket.
Yeah, at one point there was a separate ticket. I don't remember when that dropped. I think that ticket then became you in order to go into the clubs, you had to have a band. If not, you weren't allowed in.
Now, those people were still coming out, wandering around everywhere. You know, they were all over. I still think that was worse than anything Epcot's ever done.
But I'll give you this comparison. When my wife and I got married, we went to New Orleans for our honeymoon.
Yes.
That was the first half of our honeymoon. Second half is we came to Walt Disney World. We're walking down Bourbon Street in the morning.
And morning 1 a.m. or morning 8 a.m.?
I used to
live in Texas, so I understand the times.
I used to live in Shreveport, Louisiana.
There you go.
We were probably there It was, I will safely say, it was between 9 and 11 in the morning on Bourbon Street.
Okay.
Normal business day. Bourbon Street's not, I mean, shops are open, but the bars were very minimal. Yeah. I mean, they're not at full tilt after 6 o'clock type deal. Here's a family, mom, dad, couple kids. Kids were 6 and younger. Mm-hmm. And you hear the mom, they should put in the flyers that Bourbon Street's not a family-friendly street.
You know what? After the liquor.
Okay.
To bring it to the forefront of today, you're seeing all this stuff on Facebook. I'm going to now tag the Marvel. All the people, somebody should have given a heads up that Deadpool's not a kid-friendly movie.
Read a comic book. No,
the R rating wasn't a clue.
Even one.
The R, that's one. Two, your lead actor, Ryan Reynolds, is going, don't bring your kids.
Yeah.
Three, when they turned around earlier this year, or late last year, it was originally given an NC-17 rating. They're going,
really?
Don't worry, we're fighting it to get it down to an R rating. You don't take your kids. Pleasure Island's almost the same way.
Oh, sure. But at 8 o'clock, walking around downtown Disney.
8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
If you're crossing into Pleasure Island, it's like the family walking down Bourbon Street. It's not family friendly.
They had the same problem with Extraterrestrial when that was there before Stitch. You know, yeah, every ride in the whole place is fine. They go into this alien thing and scares the crap out of them.
But there were warnings.
Of course there were. But it's Disney World. It's supposed to be safe.
But there's warnings.
Yes, but warnings for an alien is different than warnings for the alcohol. And people. You can't put a warning on certain people and how they act.
That's the thing. It's the generation that's out there today.
Okay, that's the problem, Epcot's this way. There you go.
It's not the parks.
Okay.
Disney's doing their best. I wouldn't be surprised within the next 5-10 years, you're going to be paying $18 for a bottle of beer or for a cup of beer. Why? Because they're trying to discourage people from getting drunk and trying to climb the pyramid in Mexico. Which that video is just happens to be the first time someone got caught. It's not the first time it's been done.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why the prices of alcohol are so high. That
it might be a good thing for them to do, like, you punch a ticket, and this is how many stands you can go to. And then you have to present the ticket.
I don't see that happening because you're going to get the complaints, and they don't want the complaints.
All right.
Yeah, everybody's got a different tolerance. Like, you know, I can have way more alcohol than other friends of mine can, and yet I can't have as much alcohol as other friends of mine because they'll drink me under the table. It's kind of hard to legislate that.
You take me 22, 23 years ago, I could outdrink me today easily. I'm one of those. I'm a lightweight now, you know, by comparison. Now, I go beyond a second glass of wine, or I go beyond a second drink, and I'm done for the night.
Mm-hmm.
But I see people at Epcot all the time. You see them go to that point of they're beyond that last drink.
Mm-hmm.
You see them go for the chug, and that head just relax just enough and sit one last time. It's like, yeah, you have just crossed the line.
Is this a Walt Disney World problem? Does this happen a lot in California?
Yes and no. Like, there are people who do it. There are not people who make little, you know, tiny booklets for drinking around the world. I mean, like, drinking around the world at this point is, like, destination. You know, there are adults who definitely plan a day at Food and Wine or, you know, even just a normal day at Epcot to drink starting at 11 a.m. on either side and make it all the way around. California, again, much more relaxed, much more locals. There are some tourists, but obviously Disneyland is alcohol-free. Mm-hmm. Disney's California Adventure does have alcohol. They do have margaritas. They do have, you know, beer kiosks and things like that. But maybe on a Saturday night, you might see a group here or there, especially when you get to the Mad Tea Party, which, in my opinion, is the only good dance party idea ever that Disney had.
Which is gone.
Is it
gone? Mad Tea Party's there.
No, it's gone. It's going away again.
Yeah, it's going away again. But there are people that drink there. But I think for the majority of people that go, they may go have a drink or might go have dinner and drinks or something like that. But otherwise, you definitely don't see, you know, 30% of the population at 8 p.m. Pretty obliterated. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just kind of not the lifestyle, I think, that Californians have, and it's not the lifestyle, I think, that they like to represent to the tourists that go to Disneyland. The Food and Wine Festival, I mean, I don't know what it's going to be like going now, so it might change, but as far as what I've seen, you have the Disneyland social clubs, and you have a lot of younger participants at Disneyland. It's a much more 20s and 30s crowd at Disneyland right now, the entire premises. But I don't really ever see, like, rowdiness the way that I do at Epcot. You don't see people climbing up, you know, a fake Aztec temple, or you don't see people throwing up or anything like that. And I've definitely seen that at Epcot.
Right now with Disney or with Disney World or WDW, the only place at Magic Kingdom that you're going to find alcohol is Be Our Guest.
Right.
There's been talks of allowing it, but there's also been a lot of pushback as well. Mm-hmm. And there's still been a lot of pushback that they're even allowing it at Be Our Guest.
Yeah, the naughtiest I ever felt was taking a flask into the Magic Kingdom for New Year's. I know it's nerdy, but I was walking around like... Grown-ass man, I should be able to have a cocktail, and you know. But anyway, but yeah. So, I would prefer Be Our Guest is fine, you know, because you can get alcohol at Club 33 in Disneyland. And I know Disneyland is a dry park as well. I would prefer them to keep it out of Magic Kingdom just for one bastion of, you know, family, completely family friendly, no hint of it. I would prefer that. But I understand, you know, it's a great way to make money, and people prefer wine at dinner. I'm with you on that. I totally get that.
But I think, I mean, just like alcohol served at Disney California Adventure, but not in Disneyland, it's the purity of the park. It's the purity of the whole castle feel. Yeah, being where there's a castle present. Alcohol just doesn't need to be served. I don't think it needs to be in the park, period.
Club 33 is different because it's exclusive. You know, it's not an everyday person can jump in on that. And that was because Walt Disney made Club 33 that way. It wasn't even meant for the people that go there now. It was made to take, you know, political figures and celebrities and wine and dine them like that. It was never meant for any public people to be there.
Yeah, it's literally you had to have a magic ticket to get in.
Right.
Type deal. I mean, you still do now, and those people can still bring people in with them, but the wait list to get a magic ticket is still out the wazoo. So,
yeah, it's crazy. All right, well, guys, we've been down a lot of rabbit trails, and it's been great. I love conversations like this, and I love not having to talk a lot, which is great. But I do have to wrap this up because somebody has to go to bed and get up early in the morning. So let's go around, and why don't we start with we'll go in reverse order. So, Mike, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and what you do on the Internet real quick, and we'll wrap this up.
You can find me quite a few different places on Twitter at Marvel Geeks, right there. Also find me on Twitter at WebeGeeks, WebeGeeks. Website, WebeGeeks.net. Mighty Marvel Geeks and WebeGeeks on Facebook. WebeGeeks on Instagram. Other than that, I think that pretty much covers it.
Okay, excellent. And Josh, where can people find you all over the internets?
You can find me, modernmouseradio.com. That's where all of our stuff goes up. And it's not just me, it's a bunch of other people. If you want to contact me, you can find me on Twitter, at modernmousejosh. That's also my Instagram and Snapchat names there. You can find our Facebook page, /modernmouseradio. And I just recently launched another podcast, so if you want to follow that, it's How Music Changed the World, and my Twitter handle for that one is at How Music Changed. So that's where you can find me on the interwebs. I'd love to chat with anybody who wants to talk Disney music, anything. I'm game for it.
Excellent. I watched a great. It was on Netflix last night. It was the Wrecking Crew. Story of the band from the 60s and 70s, the LA band that was doing all the tracks from the 60s and 70s. It's a great, speaking of music, it's old music.
It's a great doc.
It's a great documentary. Yeah. All right, last and certainly not least, Mrs. WW Playtoons. Playtoons, excuse me. Where can we find you upon the interwebs?
You can find us at www.playtoons.com or on iTunes at www.playtoons.com. And you can find me at Mrs. Plantoons. And I just bring the funny. I try. That's my job. I make fun of a lot of things. So being here,
so add Thor to the list.
Like, yeah, right? So, you know, I have to bring out those things that nobody really likes. And I mean, dude, if I could take Chris home with me, I don't listen. Go away.
Right. Dude, Dominic just got replaced.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I'm the one that brings the funny.
That's so awesome.
If you want to laugh and you want to have some fun, come on over.
Yeah. They do really cool. What they do is they record a podcast and then they turn it into a cartoon, like a cartoon.
Cartoon.
Really cool.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
And he does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just bring the funny. You just bring the funny. And, you know, obviously you can find me over at WW Park Hoppers, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Everything is WDW Park Hoppers. I would love to see you over there. And gentlemen and lady, thank you so, so much for taking time out of your evening. I had a great conversation. I would love to do this again sometime if you guys would be interested. Hopefully, we won't have the technical problems that we did on the front end of the evening again. But you guys are troopers.
That's Hydra.
It's all Hydra. If I had the money, I would send you money. I appreciate you all, and I'm very serious. Let me know when you guys are in town, and first round's on me, I promise. But thank you guys for being a part of it, and thank you if you're listening out there. Thank you guys for taking time to listen. And we're looking forward to another episode of Table for Four next week. And we'll have a whole new cast of characters, and it'll be a lot of fun. So, thanks a lot.
Thank you.